Welcome to the Gift of Second Chances. I am your host, Melinda. This podcast is designed to educate you, make you laugh, think, react, and repeat the information you hear as we discuss the issues that are affecting and infecting our communities. Hello, everyone. This is the last week of National Women's History Month, and I want to echo what everyone has been saying all month long. Happy National Women's History Month to all the women that invest in others. And I know that is our mothers, our sisters, our aunts, our friends, all these women out here that are invested in other people. I would love to say happy National Women's History Month. My next guest, I have come to think of as family. I met her through her father, and through our conversation, he was telling me that he was born and raised in Vicksburg, Mississippi. So for those of you who know me, I'm from Jackson, Mississippi, and Vicksburg is right down the highway. So I instantly felt a connection to him. He told me to go and talk to his daughter. And as soon as I talked to her, I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to be friends. This is no doubt we are going to be friends. And she have invited me, welcomed me into her family. Her dad, the whole family has welcomed me in, and I want to say hello and welcome to my California cousin, Alicia Savage. Hey, Alicia.
Hello there, Melinda. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I am so glad that you are going to be wrapping up the podcast for March for National Women's History Month.
I'm super excited. I'm super excited.
Not as excited as I am. Okay. Because you have an amazing story. And when I found out, I knew you had to be the last guest for this month. So I know you as a giver. I know you as a very sweet person, but you tell us a little bit about you.
Okay, well, I am originally from San Francisco, where, like you said, we had the pleasure to meet. And again, when I met you, it was an instant connection. I'm thinking, wow, we are definitely going to hit it off. Your personality, your charm, your thoroughness, your care that you showed my dad. And that was during COVID. And you took out the time to come and speak to me and assure me my dad was doing well. And when I heard that accent, I'm thinking, oh, this is my kind of girl. This is my kind of people.
Not my accent.
Yes, I did. I did. I kind of leaned toward the southern accent when I hear a person who has one all our years growing up in San Francisco. Well, we went to school here, of course. But every summer, we spent both in Alabama and in Mississippi, as you said. So I always refer to myself as I'm California raised, but I'm Southern bred. So like I said, hearing your accent, I'm thinking, oh, this is gonna be my girl. So yeah, so my sister and I have a business.
Oh, so it was a match made in heaven.
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely. Yes. So about me, I'm one of five children, and I am the youngest daughter, and right below me is one brother. I'm actually in between the two brothers, and I have two older sisters, and as I said, we are from California, and I grew up here all my life, and went away to school in Southern California, and then opened up a business with one of my sisters, and we actually work between San Francisco and Southern California. So,
Nice.
yes, so we're quite the busy bees.
Yes, you are. That I can definitely say. You are quite the busy bee.
Yeah.
So I wanted you to be a guest because of your giving spirit. So when did you learn about the importance of giving? I know that Southern, background that you have, kind of help play into that. But when did you learn the importance of giving?
Well, as you said, my Southern background definitely influenced so many aspects of my life, giving being definitely one of them. We grew up always hearing our mother say, "Okay, charity begins at home and spreads abroad." So we knew automatically. You probably heard that yourself.
Yeah,
And so we grew up.
it always tickles me. It always tickles me the voice you use when you talk about your mom. So that's what I was
Oh gosh, my mother was such a storybook mother. Just once upon a time, there was a mother. That's my mom.
Yeah,
And
and that's
actually
the
my
voice
dad
you
too.
always use when you talk about your mom.
Yes, because she was
And just the
exceptionally so
fact,
pleasant.
and just the
And you
fact
know,
that
it's so funny
you
because
know, and when I hear you all talk about your mom, go ahead, say it again.
No, I'm listening. When you hear us talk about
No,
our mom.
when I hear you all talk about your mom, y'all say mommy, and it just tickles me inside when I hear y'all say mommy, mommy said this, and I'm like, these are grown people saying mommy, okay.
Sidebar, I was so tickled when the Braxtons, Toni Braxton and her sisters, they call their mom mommy. So I'm like, yes, we're in great company. So for sure. But
Okay.
yes. And so
Okay,
he
finish
always
telling
taught
your story
us.
about your mommy.
Yes. So it's both my mom and my dad. But her tone is so funny because that's the tone I use on my nephew, and he just comes right around, again, you get more bees with honey than you do with salt. So she would to encourage us,
All
she'd always
right.
speak to us so sweetly. And so growing up, we always knew that we had to share. My parents come from the rural South, the deep South, and it's a stark difference from coming from a city and then every summer going to the rural South. And I'm so pleased and feel so privileged to have had that experience growing up. And when you go, of course, to the rural South, you see different socioeconomic areas and where people are impacted
Right.
by various levels of poverty. So our parents would always make sure that, okay, now you have to make sure you keep these things nice. And when we would shop and whatnot for clothing, so you keep your things nice because when you outgrow them, someone else can use them. And so we would take clothes back home, as we call it down south. We'd take them back home to Mississippi, to Vicksburg, and to Greensboro, Alabama. And just would share with other individuals. And we also did
Okay.
that in San Francisco. San Francisco, there is infamous Sixth Street, right? Where there's a lot of homelessness and the unfortunate who live over there. And our mother,
Right.
every spring, would make sure, we would take clothes down there. And she would say,
Really?
yes, she would say to us, I said, "Well, mommy, why don't we take this just to the Goodwill? People just take it to the Goodwill." "Oh, no. People have to pay for the Goodwill, and we've already paid for these things. No, we have to now give them and share them with others." And so
Wow.
it was so funny. Yeah. That was so funny because, as like I said, I have 2 older siblings, and we would all like be in the car, and our mom would drive us down there, or daddy would drive us down there, and we would see a group of people maybe like a little distance away. We're like 12, 13 years old, preteen, but not. And this, just be polite and just let them know these are clothes for them. And so it was so funny. We were like, okay, wait, don't, wait. Some of them are a little unsavory. We would pick who we wanted to give it to, per se, because you see some people who are kind of like spazzing out, so you don't want to like get by them, and we don't want any repercussions because of that. But we would overall take them to take them to other individuals, and we would say, hi, well, hey, we have some clothes here. We have some nice clean clothes here for free. Oh, and they would come over, and the men would be so happy because I guess women have a donate more maybe, but they're like, wow, you got something for men? Oh man, this is nice. This is nice. I mean, from leather coats to really nice shirts, nice pants. And I'll never forget one time I was 8 years old and I had made a little stain on one of my shirts and it wouldn't come out, but I still wore it around. And when it was time to do our donation, annual donation, I put that one in the bag because I had kind of grown up. And I'd put it to be washed because everything she had made sure everything had to be washed before we give it to people. And then I put it in the bag after we'd washed it. And she said, excuse me. I said, yeah. She says, did you put this in the bag? I said, yes. Yeah. She says, why did you put this in the bag? I said, because I don't want to wear it anymore. It has a stain on it. And then she said, well, don't you think if you don't want to wear it, what makes you think someone else wants to wear it? And I said,
I love it.
oh. It's just, we just gonna cut this shirt up and put it in the rag set, for cleaning or for dusting, right? So this clothes, this gonna cut this up, it's gonna be in the rag set. But okay. And so that has just been like our overall history of growing up and giving to people on all levels, being charitable. When you see someone who may be a little short with their money and you see someone scuffling for change, even I do this to this day. Oh, how much do they owe? Okay, well, here, there you go. Or my sister Felicia, so clever, she'll pretend that they dropped it. Oh, you dropped this $5. Oh, well, thank you, So it's that type of behavior that we have all participated in and that we still do. Whenever someone needs something, I really give it to all of my siblings. We really step in and we know that charity is, what you're supposed to do. In addition, our mother. Yeah, our mother would just, she would say little cute things like, oh, when you share that, you're just getting more jewels in your crown, getting more jewels in your crown. And we're like, okay, in your crown for the Lord is what she was saying. And our dad, yeah, and our dad, he had the same principles. Our dad, he'd go, our dad would just go overboard. He'd say, oh, someone said, oh, well, you know what? For example, we have a lot of cousins who grew up in San Francisco. Uncle Billy, may I have just our parents would make our lunches, so like lunch meat and things. May I have a slice of lunch meat? My dad says, man, let me make you a sandwich. And he'd pile on so much, and they felt like they had like a sub or something, And so, that's just the spirit of my family to constantly give and share. And that also, yeah, then I also extended when I went to, I finished from UCLA, and one of the classes that I took, it was the study of AIDS and HIV and how it affects the body, and it was a biology class. And one of the aspects of the class is that we had to go and volunteer at an organization that served people with AIDS. And, a lot of times, this is in the 90s, that people kind of were a little still hesitant, to touch people or to be in contact with people. And it was still a very big stigma. And, I just wanted to learn more about it. And so I went, and one of the classes, like I said, that we had to go to was a place that made food. I'm sorry, organization that made food. And it was Project Angel Food. And I went there because, and we made food and prepared food. Now, this is the first time I had a different kind of feeling when I gave. Normally we gave and it just was very natural, very normal, that was just something that we always did.
Right.
And the people were happy and things like that. But with this particular group, I just felt their spirit of being ostracized. And so I would touch them and they just looked like, oh my gosh, she touched me. And just, I was thinking, wow, you know, just the human touch and how important that is. And I would deliver food and cook food. And I said, oh my gosh, people don't realize giving, it's really selfish because I'm like really getting juiced on this, you know? And if more people realize how good it feels to give, oh my goodness, it's such an amazing feeling. And you know that saying, like, it's better to give than receive? That really is true. You know, growing up, I was like, yeah, okay, maybe not. But as you get older and you feel it, it was just a feeling.
Yeah. And so
that just, you know, projected me into wanting to just do even more and give.
And that's amazing because in the 80s and 90s, especially here in San Francisco, with the AIDS crisis being so huge here and monumental here, because of the LGBTQ community, like that was so interesting because people were scared. They were literally scared of AIDS and didn't have a whole lot of information and didn't, you know, want to touch people or be around them and everything. Mm-hmm. So that was amazing that you felt compelled to want to learn more, one, about the disease, and then two, to just show people the human side of you are loved, you know, regardless, you are loved. You know, somebody out here is not scared and people out here still care about you.
Right.
So that was amazing, you know, for you to do that. I remember being in Mississippi and, you know, of course, AIDS was everywhere. HIV and AIDS was everywhere. But just hearing about it here, I don't think it was like it was in Mississippi because of the community that was here. And so I remember working with people because I worked in the hospital at that time. And I mean, you could read their charts and you knew what they had. And, you know, people was able to go into their rooms and, you know, glove up and this and the other. But to be able to show them that love and that human side on a volunteer basis, that was even more special. So
it was really special. And as you mentioned, being from San Francisco, and not that San Francisco was so hit so much more than any other large metropolitan city like New York or things like that, the concept of San Francisco is we wish everyone well, and we don't care who you go to bed with. And so that's just none of our business.
Is that the concept?
That's the concept. Absolutely. That's the concept that we grew up with. Like, no one cares who you go to bed with. I don't know what it is now because, you know, the landscape has changed quite a bit from me growing up.
Right.
But I think still the overall concept is we don't care who you go to bed with. Technically, it's none of our business. And, you know, we are humans and we need to respond to each other correctly and with respect. Right. And so in having that background in San Francisco and studying about how the disease is transmitted, so I knew I was completely safe in touching someone else and just, you know, touching their hand and touching their arm and saying, you know, I'm going to keep you in my prayers and I'm so happy to see you. And, you know, these things, you know, the voice, human touch, these things make, they mean a lot, you know, and
they
can make such a huge difference in individuals' lives. You know, the power of the voice is so incredibly important. That's why I'm so just thrilled to be part of your podcast, because you have such an amazing touch and grace and spirit about you. And you think about, oh yes, and you think about God, and God spoke the universe into existence. So speaking and touching and all those things are so quite important too. Our humanity as individuals. So I was really thrilled to be a part of that in Los Angeles. So, because that was a program that UCLA shared with their students to be a part of. So I was really excited about that.
Okay, nice. So I know you learned it as a child under your parents' umbrella, and then that carried over into your adult hood and you was able to, you know, do some things on your own. But one of the stories that I found out, and I think I found out by accident, I don't know if you thought I knew or I don't know, we was having a conversation or something, and when I said, you did what? And you just so casually said, oh yeah. So tell the audience about about what I'm talking about, because like how casual you said it. And I guess if you are that kind of giver, like it makes sense. But I mean, for you, and I love the fact that it was just, you know, so casual, like, of course I did. I mean, you know, so tell the audience what I'm talking about, because I know they trying to say, what is she talking about? Why is she going around? What's she talking about? Can somebody please tell us what are you talking about? So tell us about what I'm talking about.
Well, so the audience won't be left in suspense. There's no secret saying right. I just dropped like $1 million of somebody. Nothing like that.
Well,
let's be crystal clear. I'm not there yet. But I donated a kidney to my brother, Seraphim. That's my youngest brother.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yes.
So take us back. When was this?
So this was in 2000. Oh gosh, forgive me. I believe like mid
early 2000. Oh, mid 2000.
Like 2000, okay. like 2000, early 2000, not mid. I'm sorry, like 2001, 2002, right?
Okay.
My brother, his name is Seraphim, and if you know, the Seraphims are the angels, right? Part of the angels, seraphims and the cherubims, and he's always been like my little angel who gets on my nerves, but he's always been my little angel. And he is so his nickname is Say Say, like that. I don't know if you guys know that old song, like Say Say my playmate, come out and play with me. So anyway, that was like the little song we used to sing, and so I
didn't know that, but I'm gonna have to call Say Say when I see him next time.
Yeah, all right, we're like what? So right, so he was a juvenile diabetic since age 11, and juvenile diabetes runs in my family. I had another first cousin. Mm-hmm. Was also type 1 diabetes.
Okay.
And my brother had it since he was 11. So that's a really tender age, and how it came about, you know, my mother said she noticed him sleeping a lot, like excess and you know, urinating a lot. And mm-hmm. so some of the telltale signs, and took him to the doctor and we found that he was diabetic. So my dad was like so, so upset when he heard this, you know, when it first happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually away at school, and I said, okay, well, let me come on in. And let me find out. You know, at the time I was studying, I was studying to be a doctor at UCLA,
okay.
But I've since changed my path, but I'm still very interested in health services. And so I was learning more about the diabetes and what he was going through. And then when I would come home on different breaks or whatnot, I would go to him to his doctor's appointment and find things out. So as he progressed into a young man, he, like, you know, 19 or so,
mm-hmm.
The doctors were saying that, okay, well, he is leaking protein in his urine. Right. And so the protein in his urine means that your kidneys are a bit of a screen.
Right.
So if anything as large as the protein is coming through means that you're damaging your kidneys. And so as time progressed, they said, okay, well, you know, your kidneys are failing and then you're going to have to go on dialysis. So in understanding what dialysis was, I saw that it took up so much of his time and that it drained him, right? But he still was thriving, like a lot of people still do. But I just thought, gosh, my brother is so young, you know, how can I help? And so the doctor said, okay, well, you know, your brother is, you know, very healthy and someone could donate a kidney to him. So my dad was the first one. Let me donate mine. Let me give him mine. No.
Of course your dad was.
Right. My dad, like, I'll go, you know. And so the doctor says, well, uh-huh. You know, while that is really good and you're a parent, they said, however, maybe it'd be even more compatible if one of his siblings were to do it. Because, you know, he has half of your DNA. But his siblings share like the same DNA. So,
yeah, right.
Right. So everybody's lining up, right? And in my heart, I said, I know it's going to be me who's going to match him. I'm not going to have any problem. And it's going to be me. And my sister went, and you know that if you have any small underlying condition, you just are not a candidate for it. And it could have changed by now, but at the time, you know, that was like 20 plus years ago. And so I'm just letting them do their due diligence and whatnot. And everyone wants to help because, you know, we're a very loving family and that's the baby. And we're all crazy about, you know, Brother Seraphim. And so then they came to me and I said, oh, I already know I'm going to be the match because that's my brother. That's like my soulmate brother kind of thing situation. And sure enough, they're like, wow, you are a great match. You're like the perfect match for the time. So I said, okay, great. And so we did it. And it was so funny because prior to that, I had ran into some people before I was donating. I'd ran into some people and, you know, who we grew up with. And they said, well, you know, how is Seraphim doing? We know we heard he's on dialysis and how's he doing? I'm like, he's doing fine. I said, he's going to be doing better really, really soon because I'm going to be donating my kidney to him. And they're like, what? Wow. And I said, gosh, you're just glowing, girl, saying that. You're glowing. And I said, wow.
So I know this was your brother. I know this was your brother, and I know you wanted him to live because I have a brother and he's a younger brother, and I would do the same for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost positive that I would do the same for him.
I'm almost positive.
You know,
they can live, just want them to have a good quality of life.
I just want to say Kanias don't need a kidney, but I'm almost positive. I'll do the same.
Almost, but 100%, right?
But, I mean, you still have that fear. I mean, because this is a organ. Although you can live with one, this is a vital organ.
Correct.
And did you have any fear? Were you scared? Or was you just like, this is something that I have to do? Because this is not like a pair of pants. This is not like giving a pair of pants. this is not, you know, the shirt with the dot on it or not the shirt with the dot on it. Like, this is a whole kidney that you got to be cut. You got to go under anesthesia. You got to... You know, you got to do all these things. I mean, because you got to have surgery just as well as he has to have surgery.
Correct.
And if diabetes running your family, then, I mean, you're young at the time, like younger.
I'm popping now. Don't play. I'm still young.
Now.
I'm messing with you.
Yeah. But I'm saying... Like, if I give you mine, then that means I got one left.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it runs in the family, like, who lining up for me?
Well, juvenile, I didn't even consider those things.
But no. You passed the juvenile diabetes stage.
Right.
Say it again.
But this is a result. I didn't consider those things, number one. Number two. And then number two, juvenile diabetes runs in our family. Juvenile. So now we're both adults.
Juvenile. Okay, so diabetes,
correct.
Not diabetes as an adult, but juvenile diabetes reigns in the family.
Yes, ma'am. Type 1 runs in our family.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And so... Because of that, but there are a lot of people who have diabetes and they never need a kidney.
Right.
But my brother's diabetes was quite aggressive for whatever reasons. Uh-huh. There's a lot of my cousins. He's the only one who's had a transplant. And so when the time came, you know, it was just a no-brainer. Like, yeah, I'm ready to do it because I do know a bit about medicine. Growing up, you know, there's like so many doctors in our family and things like that. So, you know, you're always very privy to that information. But even if it wasn't, even if we didn't have that, you know, I still did my research and found out there are a lot of people who are born with just one kidney.
Right.
And you can live a very, very happy and successful life with one kidney. And so
that is true.
Yes, of course. I for sure will do this because that means my brother and I can spend more time together and it just frees up his time. And the interesting thing, and this is the truth, if my brother just was the one who asked me, who needed it at the time.
He asked you?
I'm sorry, he didn't ask me. No, he did not ask me.
Oh, he didn't ask you.
We all volunteered.
Okay.
No, he did not. Uh-huh. I take that back. My brother was the one who needed it and all of the siblings volunteered. Now, but if someone else had asked me before him, then he just would have been out.
That is...
Yes.
So you would have gave it to someone else as well.
Absolutely. Well, after my procedure, I said, doctor, I wish, so, you know, we had the procedure. So let me backtrack. We had the procedure and they said, you know, typically the one who receives the kidney is going to be up and at them so quick. Your brother's going to be the one to come visit you in your room. I'm like, what? Come on now. And sure enough, he's knocking on my door. Hey, are you okay? How you doing? Hey, and I'm like, what you doing up? And they said because they feel so much better instantly, right? That they bounce back so much faster. And it wasn't a hard bounce back for me either. But I did let the doctor know that, you know, I wish I had a million. I wish I could just pop and grow another one. Because I would do it again because of how it impacted his life. And a lot of people are afraid to donate an organ. And I can tell you, see, if you have anyone, like my name is on a list. If you have anyone who needs to communicate
or have questions about what it's like to be a donor, please have them call me, because I will share my experience with them and tell them how rewarding it is and how your lifestyle is still quite rewarding. You know, the things that you're supposed to do to make sure your kidney stays healthy, like exercise, eat the right thing, this, that, and the third. You're supposed to do that anyway, right? And so when you donate the kidney, you just implement some new things, maybe more vegetables. You eat vegetables, but I think I had a overall pretty good diet, you know, from the gate outside of sweets, but I'm better with that. So the overall concept of being healthy, that's what you want to implement. And then even some things I do that, you know, are not as healthy, you know, like gain some of that COVID weight and whatnot. And so, you know, things that you're just supposed to do in general, but it's nothing has affected me in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And I think I also attribute that to having a positive mindset, right? So if you have a positive outlook on the situation, it's nothing you can do but thrive. If you're going, oh my gosh, I don't know, and oh gosh, how's this going to affect me? And okay, then once you donate, oh my goodness, oh wow. No, you can't have that attitude. You have to have a win-win attitude every time in all things you do.
Right.
And the generous spirit that you give is going to come back to you, right? All that energy you thought that you were going to give away, it's going to come back to you. Sure, it might be scary for some people to say, oh, well, I don't want anyone cutting up on me and take this out. No, I had a laparoscopic procedure. It's not like how it was back in the day where they had to have like a huge cut. But even if I had to endure a huge cut, I would have done it. But it was laparoscopically. So I had like 2 small incisions on my left side because they took my left kidney. And that's that. And they pulled it out through a little small bikini cut right in front of like my stomach, right? So a small bikini cut.
Mm-hmm.
And they put out, so please, it's everything is so small, so minute. And to know the impact of how you can change someone's life like that is just beyond rewarding, you know? And like I told him, if I had $1 million, if I could bloom another one, I would give it. I would give it. And I want your audience to know that when you're donating an organ, you're really literally giving someone else the gift of life. And if you were already healthy, they wouldn't ask you to do it if you were already healthy. So I went through a battery of tests. And I came out so clean. I'm like, oh my goodness, good, good, good. You know, you feel so good. And how, you know, you turn out so college days. But, you know, so you're like, I have a superior clean bill of health. And you have a little drinking that you know you do when you're away from home. And like, oh, wow, my kids are still good. So, you know, you're still really happy about that on the selfish side. But more importantly, it's the idea and the thought and the gift of giving. And for individuals and for your listeners, if they contact you and they're interested about kidney donation, please don't hesitate to forward their information to me, because I would be happy to help them. Because truly, donating is the gift of life, and you change someone's life tremendously, whether you know them or you don't know them, but it really is a gift of life.
Right.
It was funny when we would go to our appointments together, and this one guy, another gentleman, he received a kidney from his sister. He was an older gentleman. And he says, oh, wow. He says, you got a kidney from your sister. And my brother said, yes. And he goes, oh, so now what? You got to sit down and use the bathroom like a girl now? Oh, we would laugh like that. He goes, you got to sit down now to pee, right? Excuse me if I can say that. And so everyone laughed. Yeah, he goes, I just shared with you because that's what they said to me. So we just both fell out laughing. So, but it's really underserved in our communities, people of color. We don't donate. And it's just such a simple thing to do for someone. So I really want to encourage your listeners to look into it. If they know someone who may need a kidney, consider being a donor. Look into seeing how healthy you are. You could still have a really good life. Then I know that there's some people who may be a little bit older and they may have a child and their child could donate. And I've heard someone say, well, you know, I know a lady who has who's on dialysis and she's relatively young. And her son is about 25 or 26. And so she's, I think, 60 something. She goes, oh, no, well, I don't want to ruin his life. Ruin his life? Be ruined? Oh, don't you know he'd rather have his mother here? And if he's able to donate, don't you know he'd rather have his mother here and to share with her and to do things with her? You know, dialysis is an amazing thing. Thank God for the person who invented dialysis, because it really is a game changer for someone who has kidney disease and renal failure.
It is, yes.
It's amazing.
It is.
Right? And so it is amazing. I don't take anything. Yeah, and I don't take anything away from that. That is amazing. And if you have the chance to just give the person maybe a little bit more freedom, a lot more freedom, actually, why not? That's how I look at it. Why not?
Yeah.
Because it could have been me. Because
a kidney does give them a lot more freedom, because with dialysis, usually you have to do it 3 days a week. You have to be on the machine for several hours doing those visits 3 days a week. So it's kind of hard to do a regular life, you know, and break for dialysis. Right. So kidney donation is extremely important for people. And if you don't want to give in life, you still have another opportunity to give in death. We have these donation, or you can check on your driver's license to be a donor. And anything that is viable will be used to help prolong somebody else's life. So if you are afraid in life, then you still have another opportunity to be able to give in death. And I know families will appreciate that as well.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, my stepson tragically was killed in an accident. And he was such a big fitness buff, you know, and he wanted to donate everything. And he donated everything. He saved so many people. He enhanced so many people's lives. I mean, like you said, so if you weren't comfortable enough to give in life, and should something happen to you, then, you know, why not share? Why not give it? And I know some people is quite sensitive, like, oh, I don't want to give it. You know, I was born with it. I'm going to keep it. And okay, but where are you going? As far as I'm concerned, you don't need it because everything's brand new, right? All the way up, right? Right. My belief as a Christian is you close your eyes on this side, you open your eyes on the other side, you popping. So it's like, what? You don't even need that old stuff. What?
Exactly.
You know? So I want people to be encouraged that, you know, you can help someone else, you know, and with that, your loved one still is living on this earth, right? Because part of them is in someone else. And so they're still here. A part of them is still here. Yeah.
A part of them is still here. That's true. I wanted you to share your story and, give that amazing, like we say in the South and in the church, that amazing testimony.
testimony,
I'm gonna give it.
Yeah,
I think it's offering time.
Right, but you make donations to give me second chances. need a new helicopter. You know, pizza.
I'm so happy that you were willing to share your story, because you know some people, they like to keep stuff like that private. And what amazed me about the story was, I mean, we was just talking about something and you just said it as if I already knew, and it was like it was no big deal. And I'm like, I love that because in this day and age, like people have to make this grand gesture when they give. You know, it's all about who knows them giving. And to me, the spirit of giving is to give from your heart, not a grand gesture that other people know that you are the one giving. I mean, you know, from my understanding, you know, how does the other person feel on the receiving end? Like, would they want people to know their situation? And so I think I asked you about, mm-hmm. you know, the Sephron mind you sharing this story. And he was like, yeah, he don't care. And I'm like, oh, no, okay.
Yeah, he wants to be,
I mean, but it was just so casual. Yeah.
Yeah, well, because my brother wants especially to be an example to others. He wants to be.
Right.
I was saying that my brother wants to be an example. That he wants to be an
example. Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, especially when diabetes, you know, affects a lot of people in the African-American communities. I'm glad that he don't mind you sharing. And so I'm so glad that you shared, but it just amazed me how it was just so casual. Oh yeah, I gave away a pair of pants and a kidney and a shirt. Huh? Wait a minute.
Yes.
Oh, and some shoes too. Just so natural.
Let me ask you on your portion, as you heard it, what did you think when you heard? What did you think when you heard it?
I mean, I thought it was amazing, because naturally I'm a giver. I haven't given a kidney. I haven't even given a fingernail. However, I have given. but I thought it was, you know, a very touching story. I was thinking, like, how would I feel? I mean, and I don't think I would have thought twice. I mean, because at the time you were younger, this was your brother, and I'm sure I would have did the same thing, because I love my brother dearly. I would want to extend his life. I wouldn't want to see him suffering, you know. So I don't think I would have did anything different. But just the mm-hmm. idea that you did it, I've never been faced with that decision either. So just the idea that you did it was amazing to me.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, the thing is, with people who have kidney disease, they're not so much suffering, is that you want them to have a higher quality of life. And if you can help someone, why not? My mother would say, her father would say, now, if you can't help someone, you sure can't hurt them, right? You're not supposed to do that. And another thing, like they would say, my parents would say, now, what are you on earth to do if you can't help someone else?
Right.
And I'm so glad you brought up this topic of giving, because as we merge into this new age of AI and chat GPT, I think is the name. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me, but when we move into this era of kind of being to ourselves, that's not how we're supposed to be. Right. I know in San Francisco, we have the cars that are automated. You know, you're driving past a car that has no driver.
Nobody.
Right? Right. Nobody up in there. And you're in a car. You're in the back seat. Right. And,
right.
And then you ask people, you're like, wow, although this technology is great, but you say, well, what made you want to choose this, you know, the automated vehicle? And they say,
exactly,
so that I won't have to talk to anybody. To me, that is a tragedy. So you it won't talk, speak to anybody? So we're moving away from the likes of humanity, from generosity. You know, we need to start embracing that. Sure, we can do all of these other things, but we can't lose sight of each other, because then right. It's going to be what, you know, the world of machines, you know, and we're going to get played. So,
well,
you know.
I think we kind of saw some of that during the pandemic, where we couldn't be with other people, and how people were suffering, and how people was, they needed, you know, human contact, and they needed other people, and they were suffering, you know, alone, and people didn't realize how alone they were until you could possibly die or get sick being connected in person with other people. So, you know, of course, a lot of people went to go get animals just so they can have somebody right there with them. I definitely don't want people to feel like you're going to be okay being alone, because we're not meant to be alone as people. No. As a human, we are meant to need each other. You know, we meant to have the human contact, the human touch, and the world is taking us in a different direction to where machines can do it and computers can do it and this, that, and the other. But, oh my gosh, let your computer break down and all your stuff is stored on there. Then what do you do? You're looking for the man who knew how to do stuff manually before the computer.
Right. Before the computer. Exactly.
Right.
And it's that camaraderie that helps when you want to be generous, right?
Yes.
That's the camaraderie that, you know, brings about wanting to share and care,
right,
you know,
right.
And being around people, you know, like you said.
Because I seriously doubt you're going to have a robot going through the streets in your homeless community passing out anything, because the homeless going to take their robot to pieces.
Right. So, they're going to break him up.
Right.
Part, so, you got to get there.
You got
come on.
Yes, you're going to need a human to still make contact with other people in need. And the computers are not going to be able to give what a human can give. So I'm so glad to have had you and you tell your story on here. So for the other listeners to hear, and also, you know, to give them something to think about, because that's what this podcast is all about, is to provide information, is to make people laugh, is to tell them about the needs in the community. And so that's one of the needs in the community is organ donation. I have, right. You know, been close to someone who was in need, and I mean several someone who was in need and who was fortunate enough to be able to get the need met. And so, and I have, you know, unfortunately been affected by somebody who didn't get what they need and they passed on. So I have had both sides of the coins, and
yes,
definitely I understand, you know, the severity of the issue, and just being in healthcare period, you know, when somebody dies, you know, that's one of the questions that comes up to the families, like, do you want them to be an organ donor? Do you, you know, so we have to quickly figure these things out so you'll know what's next to do, especially being in healthcare. So I'm so glad that right. you were willing to tell your story, and your brother didn't mind you sharing
no,
the story.
No, not at all. Like he said, if he could be a help to someone, he certainly will, and just wants to let people know that yes, this is what you know kidney or organ donation looks like. You know,
yes.
and I'm hoping that your listeners will, if someone like you comes to them in a delicate situation, that to understand the impact of how they could totally enhance someone else's life. It's kind of like, I'm sure it's very touchy for you all in the health profession to ask at that delicate time, right? But if we can kind yeah. of come a little bit more
but that's
armed
we
with
have
understanding
to do.
Right. And if someone can yeah, come like a little bit more armed with understanding, which I'm hoping your podcast and my information shed light on what it is like to donate and the feeling of donation and how you still can have a wonderful life. And I'm hoping that it will just touch someone else's mind, that they can, you know, have a better understanding of what donation is and organ donation is.
Yes.
And have a positive outlook. I know you're big
and
on
have
that.
A what?
Because having a positive outlook. A positive
oh,
outlook.
Yes.
A winning outlook.
A positive outlook. Yes. That's definitely important. But I will say this. Stop putting the kidney in between the pants and the shirt, because I don't think that's where it belongs. Yes, I donate. No. That's not where it belongs. The kidney belongs in a separate entity. Look, I don't think mommy would like that. Like, no, Alicia.
Yes,
the kidney belongs over here.
You know her already, right? You know her spirit.
I have heard about her so much to where I feel like I have to use a voice when talking about her, because it wouldn't be doing her justice. So, I think since we're cousins,
yes.
I have permission.
Yes, you definitely have permission, and you did it so well.
So,
yes.
But I thank you so much for taking out the time to come on and share your story with our listeners. I do appreciate it. All jokes aside, I do appreciate it. I love your family. I appreciate you all taking me in and just showing me love. I mean, because your dad from day one just took me in. Invited me to the house. He didn't know me from Adam. Invited me to the house. I'm like, this man invited me to his house during COVID? Like, seriously? That's Lara. and when I met you, you took me in, and I've been to family gatherings where I had to meet the rest of the family, and nobody treated
right.
me like a stranger. So I appreciate you all giving me some love and some comfort of Mississippi hospitality right here in California. And even when my mom came, how you treated my mom, and my mom liked you, I'm like, okay, this is like major for her to be asking about how Alicia doing. I'm like, okay, this is out of pocket, man. So
yes,
I appreciate you all for taking me in with your kind spirit and your giving heart and everything. So I do appreciate that. I mean, and even like inviting me to the home in LA, like y'all are just such a giving and open-hearted family. So I do appreciate that. So,
oh wow, yes, you are honorary savage, girl. People wear the shirts already. So you really need. We need to get you a shirt that says "Savage," because everybody wear our name now. We used to be teased horrifically about it growing up, but now everybody wants to have the name "Savage."
Of course they do.
And it's just a sheer pleasure because you make it easy, Linda. You really, really do. And your kind spirit in meeting your mom. I mean, I had to just show your mom. So I'm like, man, this is Melinda's mommy? Wow. You know, this lady made my girl. I appreciate her. So, yeah.
To everybody out there listening, on a serious note, look into organ donation, either in life or in death, to be able to help extend somebody else's life. So that is our podcast for tonight. Thank you so much for listening. And if you would like to tell your story on here, contact us at thegifts.23@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Alicia.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. I appreciate being on the show.
All right. Oh, you're welcome.
Take care.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Gifts Podcast. If you or someone you know have a story of second chances that you would like to share, please contact us at thegifts.23@gmail.com. That's thegifts.23@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you.